on today's episode, learn all about my favorite species, the American flamingo. And we're talking about more than just flamingos. We're talking about all the pink birds in Florida.
Welcome to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. I'm Lara Milligan.
And I'm Shannon Carnevale.
This podcast is brought to you by UF IFAS Extension in Polk and Pinellas counties.
Okay, so not exactly pink bird related, but I wanted to do a quick plug for an upcoming online course that I will be launching in mid-April called the Florida Water Stewardship Program. So if you are interested in learning about Florida's water resources and water resources kind of on a regional and local level, I encourage you to check this out. It will be kind of a fast track course from mid-April to mid-May. We will include the link for registration and more information in our show notes. So be sure to check that out if that piques your interest. Okay, now back to pink birds. If you have been listening to Naturally Florida for a while, you know that I love my birds. And because there's so many species of birds, Shannon and I had to figure out a way like to break it down for you. And we thought, let's talk about pink birds.
My favorite birds.
Because, yeah, there's not many of them. And I'm a pink bird. It's just cool.
Yeah, they're the absolute coolest. So we're going to spend some time today talking about three different species of pink birds in Florida. We're going to talk a very tiny bit about the roseate tern. Then we're going to spend some time on the roseate spoonbill and the American flamingo, also known as the Caribbean flamingo. But we thought it would be a great idea to talk just a little bit about why we see some pink birds in Florida. Because, Lara, as our resident bird nerd, pink is not a super common color in birds. Is that right?
That's right, which is why we thought it would be really cool to highlight them here. So we do have some really colorful birds in nature. We have red birds, which is not what we're talking about today. We're talking about pink birds. And the color pink is a carotenoid-based. We've talked about carotenoids before, and we often might think about beta carotene, orange. So there's kind of some orange pigmentation in there. But there's also another major component, which is called astaxanthin. And that...
Oh, good job.
Thank you. And that's just... It's a pigment that belongs to the same group of chemicals that the carotenoids come from. So we won't get any more in depth than that, but it's rare that we see pink birds. That's kind of the foundation of where the pink comes from.
Yeah. And I would caution all of our listeners, if you go Googling pink birds, even if you go Googling naturally pink birds in Florida, which I will admit I Googled just to make sure I wasn't forgetting any, I would say at least 3/4 of the results that Google came back with were not real birds. Or if they were real birds, they were AI generated images of those birds that are not what they look like in real life. So there's a pink pigeon somewhere, I think, on an island country. And it came back as like the most beautiful Barbie pink pigeon I've ever seen in my life. And I was like, oh my God, is this real? Spoiler alert, it is very not accurate to real life pink birds.
That's hilarious.
But we're talking about actually pink birds in Florida. That you can see, maybe.
Now, that being said, some of the species we're going to be talking about, there's some that are obviously pink, and then there's some not so much, which is the first species we're going to talk about today, which is the roseate tern, which I was honestly not super familiar with, but upon doing some additional research, they are a striking, striking bird. I think all terns are beautiful, but this one is right up there. Mm-hmm. And they are located down in the Keys area. Is that right, Shannon?
Yeah. So they're naturally found in the Keys and throughout the Caribbean. But in Florida, you're only going to see them really during the breeding months and only in the Keys.
Yeah. And they are considered federally threatened. So it's kind of a special treat if you get to see one. And when I was first researching this bird, I was like, I don't see any pink on this bird. It takes a keen eye to find the pink coloration, but it's on the underside, basically like their belly, if you were to think about it. And it is, upon close inspection, it is evident year round. And the research, this was a research, I will say, out of Brazil, but it showed that it was actually more evident. The pink was more evident during the non-breeding season than it was during breeding season. So that's kind of backwards from what we normally think about with colors in birds.
Right. And I would say, I mean, even though it's got roseate in the name, similar to the roseate spoonbill, which we'll talk about in a minute, which means it is pink, I would generously call this a blush.
Right, right. That's a much better. Yes. Agreed.
So the roseate tern, if you are lucky enough to see one, are likely to see them with other tern species, specifically the common terns. They'll be in large flocks together. But the roseate tern is a lighter color bird. It is smaller, slimmer, and has a longer tail. So they're predominantly black and white, but they do have that pale rosy color, like Lara said, on their underside. It has been described as being really hard to see in the sunlight because it's a blush, not a pink. And if you happen to see them in the breeding months, you're more likely to catch a glimpse of the pink on an overcast day that doesn't make it just show up as white.
Okay, but now, Shannon, I think it's time to talk about our really pink birds that we have. And as Shannon mentioned, we are going to be talking about the roseate spoonbill. And they are another species, despite I feel like I see them pretty frequently over here, but they are a state designated threatened species. So it's not the case throughout the whole state.
Yeah, I would agree. And I feel like I'm seeing them more and more often in Central Florida around our wetland projects. And I'm not entirely sure if it's an uptick in population, if it's because we have so many wetland projects that have been completed in the last 10 years that maybe there's just more habitat for them, or if it's simply because I love pink birds and every time I see them, I get excited. And I feel like that's happened more in the last 10 years.
Yes.
But I mean, I've even seen young roseate spoonbills here in Polk County, which if you look at any of the range maps from any of the organizations, you know, they don't really talk about them breeding here.
Yeah, interesting. A good project for anyone out there updating range maps.
Yes, I agree. And if you've never seen a roseate spoonbill, I think it's important that we start off saying that it really, truly, of all the birds that I think I see in Florida, the roseate spoonbill is the one that looks like it just jumped off the pages of a Dr. Seuss book. It is a crazy looking bird. So this is not the only spoonbill in the world. There are five other spoonbill species. They are not found here in North America, though. So the roseate spoonbill is the only spoonbill that we have here in the Western Hemisphere and is native to Florida. It is one of a kind. I think that's the best way to describe it. But Lara, yeah, would you go into a little bit more about what to look for?
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with the spoonbill, I mean, the name really is a good descriptor for this bird, but kind of more in depth. They actually do have a white neck and back, but pretty much the rest of them is pink. Pink legs, pink feet, pink wings and belly. Sometimes kind of on the top part of the wing, it's a deeper pink, you could say reddish pink. There's kind of little patches of that near like what we would call the shoulder. So with the pink birds that we're talking about today, the pink color is mostly attributed to their diet, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Now, when you hone in on their head, they kind of remind me of wood storks. It's like, mm-hmm, it's an ugly cute. I don't know if that makes sense. Their head's kind of this like grayish green color. They have yellow around their eyes, but their eyes are red. It's just bizarre. I mean, Dr. Seuss is just a great way to describe it. And then, of course, I'm using air quotes right now. Their spoon bills, exactly how their bill is shaped. It kind of, instead of coming to a narrow point like we think of with pretty much any other bill, this thing just, it looks like a little spatula. I don't know. That's the best way I could think about it.
Yeah, almost like a wooden spoon, I would say, is probably like a wooden spoon used to like stir a pot. That's the closest spoon shape that I think matches the spoonbill's.
Yeah. And the way they feed is super cool. If you've ever had a chance to see them, they basically hold their head down with their bill just in the water and it's open. So they've got this spoon shaped bill kind of sweeping back and forth through the water. I'm like moving my hand like everybody can see me doing this. And they're super sensitive nerve endings on their bill that helps them, as soon as they detect anything, they can snap their bill shut. This is similar movement if you've ever watched a wood stork feed as well. And what they're mostly searching for is things like crayfish, shrimp, crabs, and small fish. That kind of makes up the majority of their diet.
Yeah. And this feeding posture that Lara is describing, where they have their head down and their beak open, it does look like a wood stork. I agree. But I think the bird that you're most likely to confuse them with are actually the white ibis. And so they have a completely different bill shape than the white ibis. The white ibis has that long, curved, probing bill, and you'll see them in lawns. You'll also see them in wetland areas. But the spoonbill is really looking and probing in water. But that horizontal posture is what I'm talking about. So they hold their body, like from their tail to their shoulder, will be more horizontal or parallel to the ground than you would see with, say, an egret or a heron. Mm-hmm. And from afar, that posture looks most like a white ibis. The difference, though, is that bright color pink.
Yes.
So if you see a bright pink ibis, it is most likely a spoonbill.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, and the pink really is eye-catching. I mean, both when you're driving in your car, but like when you're on a walk, if you look up and you're like, you know, it'll kind of be like you'll do a double take and be like, is that pink? So it definitely catches your eye. And the other species we're going to talk about, which is the American flamingo, if you do see them in flight, right, both pink, key difference between the two is the flamingos have black wing feathers. So it'll be very distinct, contrasting from kind of the light pink on their wings.
And this seems like a good time to talk about where you might see a spoonbill in the state of Florida. So roseate spoonbills are year-round residents of West, Central, and South Florida, but can be seen along the coast all the way up to Central Florida on both the East and West Coast. And as I mentioned before, the range maps don't seem to include Central Florida a lot, but I see them around our large wetlands and large lakes quite frequently here in Polk County. And I don't see any reason why you wouldn't expect the same all down the Central Heartland area of Florida, especially where there is standing water. They are known to be breeding in Florida and also throughout the Caribbean and large parts of South America, specifically Brazil. So if you're down there and you see a roseate spoonbill, it is the same species. They just are found throughout the Western Hemisphere. And it's also interesting to note that there are non-breeding populations all around the coastal areas of Central America and Mexico. Usually, right after I mention the fact that roseate spoonbills will breed in Florida, I get a ton of questions about baby spoonies. Do you get that too, Lara?
Everyone wants to know, yes, when they're nesting. And yeah, I was about to say cute, but I'm trying to avoid that because we say it for all of our species.
We do. And I think personally, there's good reason for it. But baby spoonies or spoonbill chicks, they are an ugly kind of cute. So if you think about, you know, just like what we talked about with adult spoonies, the chicks have that same weird dinosaur-likey head. it is what it is. But unfortunately, they don't have the pink coloration. So roseate spoonbill chicks, their bills are not spoon-shaped immediately. They will flatten out and become more spoon-like. After about a month of hatching, they'll have, you know, their normal spoon-shaped bill. But they stay grayish until they start foraging on their own and learning from their parents. And the reason for that is, like Lara said earlier in the episode, the diet of the roseate spoonbill, you know, those crustaceans that she mentioned, aquatic invertebrates. And so they will start out gray. You'll see mama spoonbill walking around with all her little baby gray chicks, and they turn pink as they start foraging on their own. I think it's just so cute.
Yeah. And their bill, Shannon mentioned, it kind of gets that spoon shape after about a month or so. And it's almost full size at that time. So it's just hilarious because it's this tiny bird with this giant spoon-shaped bill. But anyway, yes. No, thank you, Shannon, for making that connection with their diet and the pink coloration. And I think that's a great segue to talk about our next bird, which is the American flamingo. Now, we did briefly touch on the American flamingo in our iconic Florida episode. So I encourage you to go back and check that out. But flamingos, they're a complicated beast, especially with some of the information we're going to share with you today. But according to the resources we have available to us, they are considered a native species in Florida and are protected under the Federal Migratory Bird Treaty Act. Now, there's several species of flamingos in the world. There's four that are in the Americas, or kind of, depending on the literature you read, might refer to them as the New World flamingos. And then we have two other species, which we would refer to as the Old World flamingos, that are found in Africa and Asia. Now, if you don't want to spend your life savings making a trip to Africa or Asia, you can find most of these species in a lot of zoos throughout the state and country. So depending where you are, you can check that out.
Let's focus on the American flamingo, though, because with my greatest hopes and desires is that they become a more regular sighting in Florida. And for that to happen, we need to know what we're looking for. So the American flamingo, which is also known as the Caribbean flamingo, is a bird that is very large and very pink. So the main body of the flamingo usually stands approximately 3 feet tall, but when you add in their large swoopy neck, you're talking about a bird that is almost 5 feet tall in a lot of instances. And I don't know about you, but a 5 foot tall, lanky, awkward, hot pink bird just makes me, it just makes me smile. They are just so charismatic. And for such a long, goofy bird, they are a lot lighter than a lot of people think. So they tend to weigh between 4 and 8 pounds, which is just a fun fact. But the adult is hot pink. First year birds tend to be brown and white overall, so their juveniles will not have that hot pink color. And with their regular feeding of a good diet, they should attain that full adult hot pink color by the age of 2 or 3. As Lara mentioned earlier, they do have solid patches of black on their wings, which are especially noticeable while they're in flight, but you can see that coloration when they're just standing there as well. And in addition to their pink feathers, they have pink legs and pink web feet, which help them when they are wading around in shallow water. They have that distinctive crooked bill for foraging upside down as they do. And at the tip of that bill, they do have a black coloration there as well. If or when you see flamingos in nature, which is something I have yet to do, but when it happens, these are very social birds. They are almost always seen at least in a pair, but often in large flocks when they're in areas that have a solid population, which I will say Florida does not yet have, but they are also very skittish. So we're not likely to see them in areas where there is a ton of human activity. And when you do see them, it might be from afar and you're really relying on that hot pink color and goofy shape to tell you that you are looking at an American flamingo.
Now, when it comes to the range of the flamingo, they're mostly distributed throughout the Caribbean, and specifically when we're talking about breeding populations, those can be found in Cuba, Mexico, Venezuela, Bonaire, the British Virgin Islands, and the Bahamas. Now, we mentioned that according to Florida Fish and Wildlife, they consider the American flamingo native. So there is evidence to show that flamingos were native to Florida, but they basically disappeared from the state. There's various things that attributed to this. A lot of them were harvested for the plume industry. They were harvested for different reasons. I'm sure there were other changes. So there's some documentation that says basically until about 1900, there were flocks of flamingos that from the Bahamas that would regularly migrate to Florida Bay and what we now call Everglades National Park. And if you follow the news at all, I don't know if it was just in my area, Shannon, or if you heard this too, but when we had Hurricane Idalia, we made national news, not so much because of the storm, but because of what the storm brought in, which was flamingos, which for birders was like next level. I mean, Shannon said, you know, national news.
And not birders. Right. I was so excited.
Good point. So yeah, there was actually a quote that we were looking at from a news article that said there were reportings from Texas to Florida, as far north as Pennsylvania. So yeah, just crazy. And what kind of all the birders were saying, or, you know, are the flamingos now going to stay in Florida for where they appeared or not? And I would say we're still waiting to find out. But it was pretty cool because they were able to use tags from some of them to basically track them back to where they came from. And there was a population of flamingos that they tracked back to the Yucatan Peninsula. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So for a little clarification for our non-birders, Lara.
Sorry.
These aren't tags that they weren't like GPS tags that they put on birds after they were seen in Florida. What we're really talking about are bands. So if you've heard about bird banding activity or bird banding research, they put a bracelet on the sweet little birdie legs and they've got an ID number and they keep track of where that bird with that particular band has been seen. And on flamingos, the bands are big enough that you can see them from quite a long distance away. And so that's what Lara's talking about. The bands that were on these flamingos that were seen in Florida came from a population that was banded in the Yucatan Peninsula.
Thank you. Thank you for clarifying.
Yeah.
Now, Shin and I nerded out a little bit looking at iNaturalist data for observations of flamingos.
What we found was on iNaturalist, since the year 2020, there have been almost 600 observations of the American flamingo on iNaturalist in the state of Florida. And what I find really interesting about this is it wasn't the same people seeing the same flamingos for a month and just reporting them 100 times. These were observations made by 377 unique individuals. So there are a lot of observations of flamingos in Florida for the last 4 years. And that is so exciting to me. But as Lara was talking about with Hurricane Idalia, 217 observations have been made since August 23rd, 2023, which is when the hurricane came through Florida. These 217 observations were made by 152 observers. So again, it was not the same birder reporting a flock every day for a week. It was lots of people seeing these flamingos all over the state. Sadly, though, none of those observations came from Polk County, and I'm not one of them.
I am also not one of them, but I could maybe be.
Lara, what do you mean?
So I did what I said when I looked up and I was like, oh, we were on a walk as a family. I look up, I see a flash of pink, and I was like, oh, to my daughter, I was like, look up, you know, assuming again it's a spoonbill because that's the more common species that I would see.
Obviously.
And then I kept looking. The lighting was awful. So in my credit, it was awful. But I was like, that sure doesn't look like a spoonbill. And that is an awful long neck. And of course, by the time I got my phone out, you know, anyway, zoomed in, took a screenshot. I'm convinced it's a flamingo, but maybe I'll upload it to iNaturalist and somebody could say, based on the silhouette, whatever, it's a flamingo.
Please do, because I want to see it. I think you can upload video.
I took a screenshot like within the video, so.
Okay. Yeah, let's do that. Because as I mentioned in the iconic Florida episode, I too think I've seen a flamingo. And I have checked the iNaturalist for that time period. There were no other observations at that time period. But I don't think iNaturalist really existed at that time either. And the reason I bring it up now is because I had the same exact thought process. Like, oh, look, a spoonbill. That's a really oddly shaped spoonbill. That doesn't make any sense. But I did almost fall out of the boat when I realized what I thought I was looking at. So,
yeah.
Maybe soon.
Yeah. So all that to say, just take a picture. And as Shannon and I say quite often on our episodes, iNaturalist is your friend, and it's a friend to many scientists and researchers as well. So any observations you make, whether it's a spoonbill, I mean, any pink bird we're talking about, snap a picture and submit your observation on iNaturalist.
Yeah. So there are some best practices that we're going to talk about briefly in our call to action section. Our call to action this episode is, well, it's very short. The first is don't harass any pink bird you find. They're all protected. Like every single one of them is protected in at least one way. So give them a lot of space. If you have a camera with a good zoom lens, that's how you get the really good pictures of flamingos and spoonbills and probably the roseate tern as well. You need to give them space and don't freak them out and harass them. Next is don't feed our water birds. This goes for all of our wading birds, but with the pink species, it's in your best interest not to feed them, because when we feed them things like bread and garden peas, they don't get the carotenoids that they need to have pink feathers. So if we start feeding these birds, if we can get close enough to them, they will lose their pink color over time, and it's a sign of malnutrition in them.
Yeah. And we want to see our pink birds. So for selfish reasons, just don't feed the birds.
Don't feed the water birds. I want pink birds forever. And so our final call to action just emphasizes what Lara already mentioned, which is to submit your observations to iNaturalist. This is true of common species and our rare pink species. It's something that we just continue to recommend to you as a listener of Naturally Florida, because it's an easy way for you to get engaged in real research that's going on at the moment. And we're seeing iNaturalist being cited in more and more research papers as we continue to work on this podcast. So I am very confident saying that if you submit to iNaturalist, you're having a real and tangible impact on species research in Florida.
Yes, for sure. And I think that's a great way to end today's episode on pink birds. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you get to see a pink bird, and we will catch y'all next time.
Thanks for listening to Naturally Florida, a podcast about Florida's natural areas and the wild things that live here. Stay updated on new episodes by subscribing on your favorite podcast platform. If you enjoyed today's episode, consider sharing it with a friend. Naturally Florida is produced by your hosts, Shannon Carnavalli
and Lara Milligan.
If you have questions or suggestions, submit them online at naturallyfloridapodcast.com. This podcast is brought to you by the University of Florida's Institute of Food and Agricultural Sciences Extension, an equal opportunity institution. Thank you for listening. I'm sorry, let me rephrase. I did not mean like why a red bird is red and a pink bird is pink. I meant there are red birds, think woodpecker.
Gotcha.
Cardinal, okay. Whatever. But then there are pink birds, right, which are like Barbie pink.
I think we should just use that in the audio clip.
Oh, man. I love pink birds.
Yes.